Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer turned The Wizard of Oz into a screen classic, and a lovely little singer into a star. One of the most talented stars of Hollywood, Judy Garland.
Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where
Hey everyone, this is Mindy. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Old Time Radio. Next in our Judy Garland series is her appearance on Good News of 1938. This show was MGM's musical variety show, and it was meant to showcase their established stars, their upcoming stars, and any projects that they had coming up that they wanted to promote. I personally thought it was a cute idea to have it feel like you were in an audience that was taking a tour of the movie studio, and you just happen to run into all these great variety acts that are just there being either practiced or performed outright in the sunshine on the street. I thought it was well executed, but apparently in 1937-38, when these were being aired, it felt heavy-handed to critics, and audiences didn't respond to it particularly warmly. Maybe back then they were used to a higher quality of production. I don't know. I thought it came off really well, and all the performances are outstanding. Look for Buddy Epson, Sophie Tucker, Jeanette MacDonald, all fantastic. Anyway, this particular episode was the first one. It was aired in November 4th, 1937. And at this point in Judy's career, she has two, I guess, radio hits, or I don't know if it was correct to call it that back then, actually. She had two singles that were very successful. Dear Mr. Gable, You Made Me Love You, I Didn't Want to Do It. And then the other one was Everybody Sing. And both of these songs were included in the movie Broadway Melody of 1938, which is where she started to first gain a little bit of success with audiences and critics. She had also had a role in Pigskin Parade, which was a movie that didn't really get anybody that much attention. It wasn't a big hit at all. But she was already on the radar, and her recording company actually put out an ad thanking her for the two hits. And in response, in August of 1937, MGM had placed an ad in Variety, which is the entertainment trade magazine. It's still around today. But the ad said, quote, "It's a little early to predict, but here's a prophecy for 1938. Judy Garland! ! Stardom! ! End quote. And then there's Judy leaning out of a star, smiling really big and cute and young. So they recognized that they were somewhat at a crossroads with their talent. They had some stars that were fading, and so there was a bit of a gap, they felt like. And here comes Judy, and they had her for a few years up to this point, didn't know what to do with her. Now they got it. And so they were throwing basically all of their efforts behind her and making her into the big star that everyone else knew she could be. They were late to the game, but whatever. All was forgiven because they're behind her now. And anyway, she comes in about 15 minutes into this broadcast singing Everybody Sing, and she's got a huge backup singing chorus with her. And it's such a happy, exuberant performance. You can almost see her little teenage bubbly self walking down a street in the sunshine, just having people sing behind her. I could visualize it. It's really fun. This was also somewhat of a trivia note. Maxwell House paid $25,000 a week to be the sponsor of this show. And even though it wasn't a critical success or anything like that, it did mark the first time that a big movie studio paired with a big corporate sponsor, and for better or worse, launched the love affair Hollywood has with big corporate money and vice versa. So there's that. It was, I guess, money well spent, even if it didn't gain them a lot of kudos. The master of ceremonies was Robert Z. Leonard, and he is best known as being the Oscar-nominated director of The Divorcee and The Great Ziegfeld. Anyway. He would later direct Judy Garland in Ziegfeld Girl that was released in 1941. He had a huge list of movies that he was involved in and was well respected. And he even makes a joke that being a master of ceremonies isn't really his thing, but he does a good job. And like I said, it wasn't necessarily a big critical success, but I like the format and the performances were outstanding. A lot of great, strong voices in this. So I enjoyed it. Hopefully you will too.
Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1938. Wilson lights the fuse of the MGM Star Rocket. The fuse sputters. The rocket zooms upward toward the radio heaven. Motion picture stars on the air are nothing new, but the entire facilities of the world's largest studio, all its infinite resources, a myriad of stars clustered on one lot, a dream city waking to the magic touch of a single dial each Thursday night, that is your good news for 1938. Brought to you by the makers of Maxwell House Coffee, a thrilling hour amid the pulsing, fascinating life of the great studio in Culver City. Around the lot, while scenes are filmed, songs composed, stories written, backstage to share the excitement of sneak previews, makeup tests, movie gossip. Behind the scenes to see how pictures are made, to meet the people who make them. Jeanette MacDonald, Norma Shearer, Clark Gable, Joan Crawford, Robert Taylor, and a host of others, stars as yet uncrowned. Ambitious, talented, hopeful youngsters who by your choice will someday rise to fame and fortune. Stars of yesterday, today, tomorrow, the studio gates swing open. Maxwell House brings you Good News of 1938. Wilson. And now we'd like you to meet 6 feet one and 200 odd pounds of smiling, genial personality. Twinkling blue eyes, sun-bleached hair, a voice that's deep and friendly as a cathedral bell. Metro's ace director of four-star hits. Among them, Dancing Lady, Let Us Be Gay, Strange Interlude, The Great Ziegfeld, Maytime, The Firefly, and now preparing The Girl of the Golden West. Ladies and gentlemen, the most beloved figure on the lot. Meet our master of ceremonies, Robert Z. Leonard. Affectionately known to one and all as Pop.
Thank you very much, Ted. I don't really feel that old, but honestly, now, have I really done all those things?
I got it straight from publicity.
Never heard anything straight from publicity yet. Apologies. Anyway, you might have spent a little time on the things I haven't done. For one thing, I've never been a master of ceremonies.
Oh, we'll find that out soon enough.
Just another heckler, Eleanor Powell.
Oh, wait,
Pa. Yeah, buddy up, and don't you butt in here. Well, there you are, folks, anyway. Just one big happy family. And we're glad to have all you friends of Maxwell House join us. I know that plenty of you have already been on our lot, but to the millions of you who have never seen a studio, well, here's your chance to see what it's all about. To walk around the lot and just generally see what makes the wheels go round. So, come on, everybody, to the business of the evening. Out on the lot.
This is marvelous. This is exciting.
I've always wanted to see a movie studio.
Better stick close to me. These streets are pretty crowded.
Why, it's just like a city.
The streets and numbers.
Traffic cops and everything. Look over there. Look at all those people in costumes. Old 1860 costumes and everybody in makeup.
Come on, hurry up. You're ready to leave.
Where are all those buses going, Mr. Leonard?
Take Arrowhead on location for Clarence Brown's picture. Benefits forgot.
Look, there's Bruce Cabot.
Oh, yeah. Mighty handsome Mountie, that boy. He's in Bad Men of Brimstone, too. Oh, yes, Wally Berry's in the picture as well. Bip, look out. Careful there, everybody.
What's that truckload of lumber for, Mr. Leonard?
Downstage 27, the new one they're building for Norma Shearer's next picture, Marie Antoinette.
What a street. Cowboys, gypsies.
Midshipmen, football players.
Yes, they're in navy blue and gold. Hey. Sam Wood's picture.
There's Joan Crawford.
Spence and Tracy.
On their way to the mannequin set, I guess. Hi, Joan. Hello, Spence.
Say, where's that music coming from?
Sounds like 100 voices.
Must be a terrific set they're on.
Well, here's your first surprise. All that music's coming from this little 4x4 booth.
Oh,
yeah?
No.
One of the sound recording booths. Doug Shearer's probably in there checking the sound pack. Now, if you'll all be quiet, I'll open the door and we can just listen to it. Hello, Doug. Just brought a few of our Maxwell House friends here to your soundtrack.
What's a soundtrack, Mr. Leonard?
Well, it's those little scratches on the side of the film that record music or speech. Without those, the film would be silent. What's on this reel, Doug?
It's part of the Rosalie track.
Swell. Run off a few feet for us, will you? You know the part where Eleanor Powell does that long spiral and breaks her way through all the drums and then the big climax?
Okay, Pop. It's still a little rough in spots, but we'll run it. Let it go, Max.
Better than that. We're going to shoot this number tomorrow night. Mr. Rapp's going to look at it. Now, you know Harry Rapp. Now, come on. What's wrong with you? What do you mean you're tired? You've only worked 14 hours a day.
16?
You're just a bunch of sissies. Give me that piano again. Now, hit into it. All right, here we go. That's more like it. Give me those smiles. Keep those heads up. Keep that line straight. Give me that time step. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now you're doing it. Come on, smile a little more. That's it. Now faster. That's it.
Wait a minute.
Hey, what's the idea?
Wait a minute there. You're doing that step all wrong.
Now look here, buddy.
Please excuse me, Dave. I'll help these kids along. Like to learn this, kids?
We've never been introduced to you.
You mean that none of you has even recognized me? Why, I'm astounded, amazed, and furthermore, tell him, George.
It's George Murphy.
He's an Epson with the bluest kind of blood. But he's my pal, so I just called him Bud. Touch it, Bud. That's enough.
As the teacher, Mr. Goon, will do. Kim, you'll pardon us. Who the heck are you?
Me? Why, I thought Eleanor all she knows. She is my lucky star. I'm the guy who educated her toes. I'm George Murphy.
Well, what do you think of that?
Eleanor Powell. You see, we're passing by, and,
Yeah, you see, the girls here sort of kind of caught our eye.
Oh, never mind, now. Now, girls, here's something you might want to try. Oh, look at this. If you want to learn to dance, you can be a social riot. Step right in the crib and try it.
Follow in her footsteps. If you want to crash Broadway, all the mob will pay $5.50. Try and learn to do a nifty. Follow in his footsteps. Till the day to graduate, our method is quite scholastic. Then off we'll go to Buffalo, tripping the life fantastic. If you want to win the crowd, everybody loves a dancer. You can learn, and here's the answer. Follow in our footsteps. Go it, buddy boy.
Touch it,
bud. Boy, buddy, it's a big cat. Look at that man. Kill the people.
Woo! Come on, George. Attaboy, go to town.
Look out, Eleanor.
All three. Look at the three of them go.
If you want
everybody. Let's see if we can find some other set to go on.
I wonder what set we're going to.
Well,
we're
hiding.
We'll find it. Nobody's walking in the back.
Where are we now, Mr. Leonard?
This is Arthur Rosenstein's studio, our vocal coach. He's trained some of the greatest singers in the country. Let's look here, right? That's Arthur at the piano.
Who's the dark young man with the wavy hair?
Why, don't you know him? Igor Gorin.
Oh,
you've heard him on the radio.
Yes,
you saw him in Broadway Melody, too, huh? I'm sorry, Igor. Pardon me. Excuse our breaking in like this, but it's Thursday, you know. Maid's night out, and we've got to help ourselves. How are you getting along?
Oh, very well, thanks. Working.
Working, huh? Well, that ought to get you somewhere. You've heard the story about the man who worked very hard and finally got $5 million, haven't you?
$5 million? Why, that is a great deal of money.
Well, it ain't hay, Igor. But this is how the man got it. He worked and worked and worked for 40 years. And after 40 years, his aunt died and left him $5 million.
Oh, that is quite a success story, Mr. Leonard.
Well, Igor, what I've been working up to is your own success story. How about it?
My success story? Now, must I tell it again, Mr. Leonard?
If you don't, I will.
Well, I should like to hear it from you.
All right, then I'll tell it. Let me see now. You studied music in the conservatory at Leipzig.
Excuse me. I studied with Levinsky in Moscow.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Then you got a job in the men's chorus at the Berlin Opera after that.
Excuse me. It was the Vienna Opera.
Of course. You were understudying the famous tenor who starred in Tosca when suddenly one night he got temperamental.
Excuse me. It was not a tenor. It was a baritone. It was not Tosca. It was Lohengrin. And he didn't get temperamental. He got laryngitis.
Well, those are only details. We'll skip those. Anyway, the management came to you and asked you to sing the role, I believe.
Excuse me.
Now, what have I said wrong now?
They didn't ask me. They told me.
All right. I guess probably you'd better finish the story.
Well, the story is almost finished now. I told them I couldn't learn the role in 3 days. They said I must. I told them my German was not good. They said, sing it in Russian. I told them the costume were too big for me. They said, well, we'll make the costume fit. I told them it would be a disgrace, a joke, impossible.
So what happened?
So I sang it.
Of course you sang it. The show must go on. And did they like you, Igor?
Well, if I may say so in my own humble way, I was a sensation.
Well, Igor, if I might say so in my humble way, I think so, too. You're one of the lucky ones. You really became a star overnight.
Yes, but please don't forget that like your man with the $5 million, you know, I've worked hard for many years, and I'm still working. You see, I have no rich aunt.
All right, how about going to work now? Remember the other night at Jeanette's we had dinner and you sang a little composition of your own that...
Oh, you mean my Caucasian melody?
Yes, would you sing that?
Oh, it'll be a great pleasure, Pop.
All right, son.
Thank you.
every chance, I'll tell you that. Now, I know you want to get back to your work with Rosie, but I want to tell you I'm proud to present you as part of our good news of 1938.
Thank you, Pop.
You're welcome.
If you please, Arthur.
All right, on our way, back to the lot.
Just imagine such a marvelous voice, and he still has to practice his scale.
Out this other exit, everybody, and we'll find ourselves on one of the most interesting sets from Broadway Melody of 1938, the longest street in the world, Broadway.
Who's that singing?
That's 14-year-old Judy Garland coming down Broadway, and this should be fun. Keep your eyes on those boys to the right of her and those girls to the left. Judy's coming straight down Broadway to meet us first. Then the others will follow from the side street. First the girls, then the boys. All to converge right here where we stand. And then we'll all march down Broadway together.
Everybody start. Can't go wrong with a song in your heart.
Here come the girls now to join you.
This is Reisenweber. Doesn't that mean anything to you, kids? You've got your Hollywood restaurant, your French casino, your 21 Club, and you think you've got something. Why, Reisenweber's with all those places rolled into one. Reisenweber's, we had 3 dance floors. There was Isham Jones on the top floor. On the second floor, the original Dixieland jazz band. On the main floor was yours truly, Sophie Tucker. And you know who played in my band? Gus Arnheim at the piano. And for my violinist, Richard Himber. And you say this place is dead? Why, for me, it's alive. I hear music all the time. And it brings back memories of some of the greatest stars that ever lived. children, it's your Broadway. But it was my Broadway. And I can remember just yesterday, Shenley's, Rector's, the old music hall, where I first sang, tomorrow night at the Dockbound Strutters Ball. Up in the lights were Montgomery and Stone, and that Yankee Doodle Boy, George M. Cole, Al Jolson, Zeke, and Gabby DeLee, and Lillian Russell, so gorgeous to see. Beloved Will Rogers and Grace LaRue. My goodness, don't those names mean something to you? Names the world will never forget. We had Irene Franklin singing Redhead. Yes, sirree. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Irene Franklin herself in person on the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer lot. And who can forget that lovable rascal, Ukulele Ice, singing in the rain? Cliff Edwards,
what a glorious feeling. I'm happy again. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain. I'll just keep singing in the rain.
And remember that bombshell of energy, Eva Tangway singing, I don't care, I don't care. Ladies and gentlemen, a hand for Eva Tangway, who's at her radio tonight, right in Hollywood, listening to this program.
No wedding bells for me. I'm as happy as
can be. What does it all mean to you? No wedding bells for me. Trixie Braganza herself. Good old Trixie.
Gee whiz. I'm glad I'm free. No wedding bells for me.
And the man who caught the greatest soul they know, Gus Edwards. Today.
Return you to the Metro studios for more good news of 1938. Jeanette MacDonald, star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures and star of Vic's Open House, with Alan Jones in preview scenes from their latest musical picture, The Firefly. We pause now briefly for station identification. Sophie Tucker and all you grand stars who appeared with them. The old Broadway and the new friends and the old. We'd like to keep you all. And I know Maxwell House feels that way too. As many of you know, Maxwell House Coffee got the name from the famous old Maxwell House down in Nashville, Tennessee. And to make all you folks feel right at home, we've built right here in the heart of the MGM lot a charming replica of the old Maxwell House. And there it is, right across the way. Could you go for a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House Coffee?
Sounds good to me. What are we waiting for?
Just waiting for the water to boil. Come on, let's go in.
There's a model of the showboat.
Yes, that's the model of the old Maxwell House showboat that you've enjoyed up and down the river for so many years. You remember? Your ticket of admission is just your loyalty to Maxwell House Coffee. Well, that holds good for these shows, too. And while we're sipping our coffee, I want you to meet two of our most distinguished guests tonight. Mr. Louis B. Mayer, head of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, and Mr. C.M. Chester, chairman of the board of General Foods Corporation, the people who make Maxwell House Coffee. Mr. Mayer, won't you say something to our guests, please?
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. I'm happy to add my word of greeting to the friends of Maxwell House Coffee. My only regret is that our president, Nicholas M. Schenck, whose inspiring leadership has meant so much to all of us, is not here to add his good wishes in person. Our business, of course, is to make motion pictures. We have tried to make good pictures, and your response has been both generous and satisfying. But tonight, with Maxwell House Coffee, we embark on a new adventure. The complete merging of radio and motion pictures. An adventure conceived to bring you what we sincerely hope will be radio entertainment of a very unusual character and of a very high standard. Mr. Chester, let me welcome you. And through you, the radio audience tonight, not only to the MGM lot, but into the MGM family. And in token of that welcome, let me present to you with this master key to the big gate of our studio.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I accept this key to the MGM lot on behalf of our listening audience, and I'm happy to join in welcoming them to this new radio program. Hereafter, these Thursday evenings will find me in the living room of my home, listening with my family, as you are now listening with yours. And that's the way I wish it to be, because these programs are designed for the family as a unit, a group, the most important group in America. It is indeed a privilege for American business to be able, through the means of the radio, to visit in your homes and talk to you about their products. But with that privilege, there is a grave responsibility. That is to provide your family with entertainment, wholesome, friendly, and truly worthwhile. I have watched rehearsals for this show. These intimate glimpses behind the scenes have interested me as I know they will interest you each week. I don't know of another place in the world where there is possible such a wealth of entertainment as here on the MGM lot. And I know that because of these weekly visits, we will all take an even deeper interest in the motion pictures which we see in our local theaters. I know I shall. And now, Mr. Mayor, as we leave the old Maxwell House to continue our way around the lot, the first thing I would like to do for our friends is to unlock the doors of our preview theater for tonight's performance of Firefly.
All right, Mr. Chester, let's begin. I am privileged to present one of the screen's most glamorous and brilliant stars, Jeanette MacDonald, who reaches new heights with her performance as the Firefly, and with Jeanette, that talented young singing favorite, Alan Jones, who plays the part of Don Diego. They will present scenes from the picture which you will see in your local theaters tomorrow, The Firefly. And who should be better equipped to paint the setting than the man who directed it, our own great Bob Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Not very difficult for a director to mix his colors when he has such fine materials to work with. A Jeanette MacDonald and an Alan Jones for his action, Herbert Stoddard for his music, Hans Stromberg for his producer, and such a broad canvas as afforded me by the story of the Firefly. Beautiful, glamorous, enchanting, the most glorious spy of her generation. The year is 1808. The scene is Europe. War clouds over every nation, over every capital, the dread shadow of Napoleon. Spain is facing a national crisis, threatened daily with possible invasion. French troops massing on the border, and yet, for a moment, the people of Madrid forget their cares and surrender the city to a gala celebration. Their beloved young king has just arrived in Madrid, and
proclaimed a week of fiesta with food and wine for all. Bells ringing wildly, crowds cheering in the streets, singing, dancing, the city has gone mad with joy. And gayest, brightest, merriest of all, the little cafe where Nina Ozera, the famous firefly, is singing for the crowd.
Senor.
Oh, thank you, waiter.
This senor is very lucky to have his table so close, so near.
So that's the firefly, eh?
Si, senor. She is wonderful, no?
Beautiful, beautiful.
But it is no use, senor. She has eyes only for the French officers.
Well, then, as good Spaniards, we should do something about that. Encore, senorita, the firefly. I've come 100 miles to hear you sing it.
100 miles, senor? Oh, then I'm in your debt.
I'll take your notes for it.
With full interest. One note for every mile.
And more.
And a kiss, senor. How much would that be worth?
500. 1,000. Senorita, that kiss was beyond all reckoning.
How much, senor? She kissed you.
What do you say, senor?
What do I say? Lend me a guitar.
Here, senor.
What do I say? The magic of a woman's kiss
is far sweeter than wine. If ever love were more than this, I'd worship at its shrine. My senses reel, I still can feel a spell of living power. The magic of a woman's kiss is burning in my heart.
Well sung, senor.
Did you like it, senorita? Will you have dinner with me?
Oh, no.
A glass of wine?
Oh, no, I'm
a
sorry.
A dance, perhaps. Oh, please.
And so it begins with a woman's kiss. A kiss that means nothing to the glamorous Firefly, who is really a spy, a secret agent of the Spanish government, who will dispose of the young man, as she has dozens of others, when her use of him is ended. But the young fellow has his own ideas about that. The next afternoon, Nina and her maid Lola are on their way to France, charged with the dangerous duty of spying on Napoleon's army. Suddenly, on a lonely stretch of road, the young fellow bobs into view and calmly rides his horse alongside the coach. Nina is furious, the young fellow amused, and the ragged little boy up on the driver's seat delighted as he pipes away on his flute.
Please, senor, you must go back. I have an engagement in Bayonne. I have music to study. I have plans to make.
Have you any idea how beautiful you are?
Pedro, drive faster, please.
Si, senorita. Oh, there may be bandits along the way. You'll need me.
Thank you very much, but I don't want to trouble you.
Trouble you? You can't help it. Why, you've troubled me from the moment I set eyes on you.
A persistent young man, senorita. Too persistent, Lola.
You really don't mind my riding out here, do you, senorita?
The road is free. You can do as you like.
Possibly I can entertain you on your trip.
I'm sorry. I'm going to sleep.
Splendid. I'll sing you to sleep. Hello.
I'll play for you, senor.
Hello, little fellow. What's your name?
Juan, senor.
Can you play a lullaby?
No, not that. If you must sing, make it something with spirit. Something lively and gay.
But I thought you wanted to sleep.
Oh, I can sleep through anything. I was simply thinking of the mule.
Oh. That's fine, Juan.
Does she not have a day to play?
Who? The senorita?
Oh, no, the mule. Amigo mio, is she listening to my song?
Who, the mule?
No, the senorita. Si, mi muchachito. She'd love to sing it too if only she knew the way. But try as she may, in her voice there's a flaw. And no.
But now let's get along with our story. On to Vitoria. That night, Nina tries to think only of the difficult, dangerous work ahead. But despite herself, she finds herself strangely attracted to this young man who so persistently follows her. That evening, they dine together in the little outdoor garden of the inn. Afterward, a stroll in the moonlight along the brook, and from there to the barnyard for a few last-minute instructions.
Pedro, I want to make an early start tomorrow, no later than 5.
Si, senorita, 5 o'clock.
You'd better get some sleep. Good night.
Good night, senorita.
Oh, 5 o'clock. You know I hate to get up that so early.
Now, listen to me, senor. You're very charming and very entertaining, but you're not coming to Bayonne with me.
You mean you could send me home, put me out of your life so easily?
I'm afraid I could.
Then you shouldn't have kissed me that night in Madrid.
But I told you why I kissed you. To get rid of that French officer.
Well, there'll be hundreds of French officers in Bayonne. You'll need me more than ever.
Oh, good night, senor.
Oh, please, not yet. It's much too lovely a night to sleep. Sit here and talk to me just a little while longer.
Here? In the barnyard?
No, here, in the ox cart.
Oh.
Let me move the water bucket. Now, up you go. That's it. Are you comfortable?
Mm-hmm. Tell me, what do you do? I mean, besides following strange women around the country.
Not women. Just you.
Oh, well, all right. Aside from that.
Oh, I have some money that my family left me, and I just travel around and amuse myself.
Does that satisfy you? Is that all you want of life?
It was. Till I met you. Nina.
Oh, please don't. Even you couldn't be romantic in a barnyard.
Why not? What's the matter with it? Why, this place is full of romance. Listen to that Italian song. Why, it's like Venice.
It smells like Venice.
It is Venice. Where else could you find a moon like that? And look over there. See the Dome of St. Mark's? The one with the pigeons?
Funny. I don't see it.
That's because you got your eyes open. Now shut them quickly. Now do you see it?
I don't see the dome, but I just heard one of the pigeons.
I knew you would. Now we're going for a ride. Gondolier, take us to the Grand Canal. Now keep your eyes closed. There. We're pushing off. You hear the lapping in the waters?
Mm-hmm. In the water bucket.
Stop peeping. We're moving now. You feel the boat rock?
Yes.
Feel the sea breeze?
Yes.
Now where are we?
In the barnyard.
No, we're in Venice.
Oh.
In my gondola, let us climb for the drowsy blue lagoon and float on the yellow tide where sleeps the dreaming moon. I'll fasten a crown you'll adorn from the gold.
Don't you believe this is Venice?
No. Oh, and I'm afraid I'm not the only one. We'd better get out of here.
Oh, Nina, you can't tell me you weren't really a little moved by my song. I saw it in your eyes.
Well, yes, I was. Once.
I knew it.
You know, that last line where you said,
my heart to the throne, dear. My heart to the throne, dear. There you shall rule alone.
You know, just before your high note.
Yes, yes.
Well, I was wondering.
What?
I was wondering if you'd make it.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, now I've hurt you. Oh, please. I didn't mean to. Really, I didn't.
You need sympathy. Sympathy. Don't sympathy.
When you forget to be on guard, your voice is soft, your eyes are soft. Oh, you do love me a little, don't you?
Diego.
Tell me you love me.
I do, I love you.
Janina Mia.
Darling.
I guess we have time for just one more sequence. Now, we don't want you to get the idea that the Firefly is all light, love, and beautiful music. There's a powerful, gripping drama in the background all the time. Napoleon, war, espionage, rolling drums, marching men, a nation's destiny in the balance. Nina Bayonne has been working desperately to complete her job. Finally, she gets her precious information. All that remains is to get it through to Vittoria by carrier pigeon. In high excitement, she writes her message, prepares the birds, opens the window, and then...
Lola, look.
What is it, senorita?
What is wrong? This is not our pigeon.
Oh, senorita.
The markings are different, see? See the other one, too. Someone's changed them.
Oh.
Substituted our pigeons.
Oh, so your message would go to them. But who, senorita? Who?
I don't know.
But think, senorita. Did anyone see you at the bird store? Who knows where we live? Who has been with you all these... Don Diego.
Oh, no. Oh, no, Lola. It couldn't be he. Not Don Diego. And yet
he saw me get the birds. He followed me everywhere.
But he loves you, senorita.
I wonder.
Lola, get rid of the birds. Destroy the message. I'll be back in an hour.
But where are you going?
I've got to be sure, Lola. I'm going to Diego.
You won't have to parade as Don Diego much longer, Captain. You've done your work well. She'll be under arrest tonight.
We haven't any real proof against her, Colonel.
We will have. We've changed the pigeon. Those birds will bring her message straight to us. A quick court-martial and...
Why must we?
Sorry, my boy. It isn't pleasant, but it's part of our job.
Yes, I know. Who's there?
Diego!
Nina, she's come here.
This is your chance. Get the truth. I'll be back at the curtain.
Diego!
Just a moment.
Good afternoon. I've finally accepted your invitation to call, Diego.
I'm delighted.
Well, aren't you going to ask me in?
Yes, of course. Come in. Have you had lunch?
No.
Oh, you must be starved. Let me get you something. Some wine, some fruit.
With some wine. I'm really not very hungry.
Then wine it is.
Your place is very charming, Diego.
Yes, isn't it?
I didn't think you could get a place like this on such short notice.
I was lucky, wasn't I?
You deceived me, Diego.
Deceive you?
Mm-hmm. You told me that 1 hour away from me made you wan and pale and altogether miserable. I find you looking very well.
Oh, I always recover quickly the moment I see you. Now, a toast.
To us.
To us. It's getting late.
Oh, but I just came. Remember when you said that?
I remember. Every word. Every moment.
Diego.
Yes?
Look at me, Diego. You meant what you said that night in Vittoria, didn't you? That you loved me.
You know I do.
Then I'm going to ask you to do something for me.
Anything.
I want you to take a message.
A message?
Yes, I want you to start at once.
Oh, where am I to go?
To Vittoria.
Vittoria?
Yes, here is the note. You will deliver it.
To whom?
Read it.
Nina.
I'll take that note, Captain Andre.
Captain Andre?
Of the French military intelligence.
French?
Yes, Nina Maria. It took us a long time to find out who was getting information from our officers in Madrid, Senorita. It was Captain Andre who first suspected you. You're a very clever woman, Nina Azara, but not clever enough.
I don't know what you mean, monsieur.
We've caught you. I give you until tonight to get out of the country.
After what I've learned today, I've no desire to stay.
Nina. Wait, Nina.
Nina, please. Oh, I know you hate me.
No, you're quite wrong. I have the greatest admiration for you. You're a very valuable agent. You sing love songs beautifully. And your lovemaking is completely convincing.
You've got to let me tell you. Oh, at first I thought of it as just another assignment. I even thought it might be fun.
Well, wasn't it?
Until I fell in love. Oh, I wanted to tell you. I wanted to warn you. But I was under orders, the same as you. Oh, no, please, don't turn away from me. I do love you, Nina.
Love?
I do. You must believe me.
I'm afraid I can't believe anything you've ever said. Goodbye, monsieur. Perhaps we'll meet again sometime. Perhaps. In Venice.
Brilliant climax. And we only wish we had time to give you more of the thrilling scenes that lead up to the glorious happy ending. On behalf of Maxwell House and their millions of friends, we wish to say thank you, Jeanette MacDonald, Alan Jones, Robert Leonard, and all the others in the cast. All you listeners will be happy to know that The Firefly, from which you have just heard a few scenes, will open in your local theaters all over the country beginning tomorrow. Next week, your master of ceremonies, Robert Young, taking you on another tour of the studio. Backstage with that adorable clown, Fanny Bryce. Round the lot with Judy Garland, Igor Goran. Into rehearsal with another bit of good news for 1938, Metro's newest find, 17-year-old Betty James. Then there's Gilbert Russell, idol of England's radio fans, making his first American appearance on this program. For last, Ted Healy and his stooges. And to top it all, Joan Crawford and Spencer Tracy in scenes from one of your good news pictures of 1938, Mannequin. And all under the direction of Meredith Wilson. So now until next Thursday, this is Ted Pearson saying good night and good news from Maxwell House Coffee. The coffee that is good to the last drop. This program has been produced by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer under the direction of Bill Bacher.